Lisa.
I'm Justine.
And we are the Murder Sisters. And this is episode 25.
25. Staying alive. Whoa.
Dorks.
I know.
Per the usual, we have no announcements because, you know.
We have nothing except
we're
just
all business.
We're announcing we're doing episode 25 right now.
Mm-hmm. So, Justine, why don't you tell us a little bit about this episode?
I will tell you a little bit. So, today's case we are covering is the murder of Jasmine Fior by her very, like, five-month marriage
Brief husband.
And there were red flags, so just pay attention to those. So
yeah.
I'll start it off. All
yeah,
right.
Yeah, go for it,
Here
girl.
We go. Jasmine Fior, born Jasmine Lepore on February 18th, 1981, grew up in Bonnie Doon, California. Mm-hmm. A little bit about Bonnie Doon. I didn't realize. It's in Santa Cruz County.
Okay.
And I went to UC Santa mm-hmm. Cruz, so I should know about Bonnie Doon, but it's so tiny on the map.
Okay.
That I just didn't know about it. Bonnie Doon is a very small town. No real, like, city center. No, like, downtown. It mostly has wineries.
Oh, interesting.
And is also known for its lavender farms.
Cute. I like that.
I think that's great. And mm-hmm. people there.
I think that's great.
I think it's just great that they have lavender farms. People there are probably really calm and sleep.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Does growing lavender give you the same effect as?
That's like a footnote research project.
Okay.
So the population is less than 3,000. So it was a small town on the coast, but Santa Cruz County in California is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Not like your Midwestern small towns. Okay. It's a California small town. Jasmine was raised by her single mother, ceramic artist.
Oh, cool.
Lisa Lepore, after her parents divorced when she was 8. Jasmine was described by her mom as having an agenda every day from the time she was 3. When I say agenda, I mean like a daily agenda.
Like a to-do list?
To-do list. Like she knew what she was going to be doing
Not
for the
like
day.
Malicious.
Okay. I was like, where is she going with this? She said she would wake up in the morning and have her day planned and was quickly given the nickname General Jasmine, which is cute.
That's
cute. 3. All right, mom. Today we're doing this, that, and this. A close friend, a family friend who was like a second mother figure to Jasmine described mm-hmm. her as being a reincarnation of Marilyn Monroe. She was beautiful on the inside and the outside. And any man who like met her just fell instantly in love with her because she was like cool, genuine, mm-hmm. beautiful.
Must be nice.
Lisa. Jasmine was a bit of a tomboy also growing up. She loved playing football with the boys, riding motorcycles, sailing boats, and riding horses. Her friends said that she had big dreams of being famous since she was basically like in elementary school. Like she had.
I'm getting out of this small town and becoming something.
Getting out of California and going to Southern California. No, I don't know. But yeah, she always had dreams of being an actress, a model, just like making a name for herself. And her friend said she brought a bit of excitement to their small town because of her big dreams. And they believed her because she believed herself. Jasmine soon followed her dreams shortly after graduating high school. And she moved to Las Vegas, Nevada, where she mostly modeled for restaurant and swimsuit ads.
Mm-hmm.
She also did some commercials for adult phone lines and worked in casinos. So she was beautiful. And, you mm-hmm. know, Vegas, like, oh, you know, she made money.
Yeah.
Made a living by being beautiful and doing her thing. And at first it was great and fun. But she realized, like, maybe I want to get away from this kind of life. And she discovered her real passion, which was in fitness. She had dreams of one day opening her own gym. And she also simultaneously had passed her real estate exam and wanted to become a real estate agent. So she had like these specific mm-hmm. goals that were like not necessarily connected, but she went for each of them equally. Jasmine. So Jasmine had a string of exes. Like I said, guys loved her. And so she had a string of exes, including an ex-husband. She had an engagement that was eventually called off. To me, it seemed like she was the one who broke things off because a lot of these exes were still trying to pursue her after mm-hmm. the breakups. And she would like, you know, still talk to them.
Yeah.
And be in contact
kind
with them.
String them along, I guess.
Maybe. Yeah. Play in the field.
Yeah.
I guess.
Okay.
And she was starting to feel lonely living in Vegas. She was like on the casino scene, kind of a party girl, feeling lonely, like she wanted someone. And then suddenly she met this VH1 reality star named Ooh, Ryan Jenkins.
What a catch.
On March 16th, 2009, they met in a Las Vegas casino. Ryan was in Vegas after filming the reality show Megan Wants a Millionaire. And immediately the couple hit it off. And like many people do in Vegas, they got married only 2 days after meeting.
Mm.
We've heard it before.
Very smart.
It happens. Megan Wants a Millionaire, just to tell you a little bit about this reality show. It was like a bunch of single millionaire men who were like fighting to win the hand of former Rock of Love contestant Megan Hauserman.
I have no idea.
Who was very openly looking to marry a millionaire. Like she was cool. Like, I want to marry a rich man. And they're like, we can make a show out of that.
Okay. So Ryan's a millionaire.
Yes.
Okay.
And the casting producers for the show said that Ryan had the best personality in the world. And he was immediately chosen to be a contestant on the show.
Well, we also should keep in mind that that person's world is...
Yeah.
Revolves around reality stars.
It's so, like, what world?
It's like...
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
The in best the out world, of the worst.
I've seen a lot of reality like applicants and... Yeah, you're
He's
right,
it,
Lisa.
Man.
He is it. He was also described as being not like the best looking guy, but having the charisma and personality to like possibly win the prize. So there's also a prize of $250,000. I do want to discuss the process for casting in the world of reality television. First of all, there are no like set of rules or regulations around the casting process, but typically an applicant will fill out some paperwork that lists their history, like basic history, including previous addresses, jobs, some financial information.
Mm-hmm.
They will then go through a written test, like some written tests, which is more of the psychological application process. And they will interview with a psychologist, and then they have to disclose some of their like psychological medical history too.
If there is any.
If, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Then there's a background check, which I've wondered a lot on shows where I'm like, did they even check this person? Because they're crazy. But there is apparently, on depending on the network and the show, a background check is performed. And that includes criminal and arrest history. Since the show Megan Wants a Millionaire was based in the U.S., the production company had to outsource to Canada to an agency for a background check. Because like within the U.S., they can do background checks in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
But since Ryan was a Canadian citizen,
they
had to then outsource to another agency. So it was like, you know, the production
company
who hired this company, who hired this company. Well, I wouldn't say it took longer, but it did. It
muddied the water.
Yeah, yeah. Watered down. I don't know. Muddied the water a little bit. Yeah. His record came back clean. And I will say it was later found out that Ryan did have a history of assault. Domestic assault.
Okay.
So someone did not do their job. They're like, he's clean. Cool. You're in. After receiving his false background check, they cleared him. He was in. They loved him. Great guy. And he was then joined to cast Megan Wants a Millionaire. Ryan came extremely close to winning the prize money and winning, you know, the whole show. And Megan actually really liked him, despite his, like, fake Rolex watch.
Weird.
and the one pair of pants that he wore for the entire show. She trusted that people did their due diligence. He did have money, but, you know, whatever. She was like, he's down to earth and he's cool and his personality is cool. But actually, Ryan wasn't interested in Megan. He wanted the money. He wanted to win the show. And after he found out, like, the producers kind of told her, like, his one-on-one interviews are not great. People are not going to want him to win. And so they persuaded her to choose somebody else. She was actually planning on, like, hooking up with him later, like, saying, no, I really wanted to. But Ryan was like, I'm out of here. I didn't win. Bye. And he went to Vegas, where he then met Jasmine.
Okay.
So bringing it back a little. At some point after marrying, after Jasmine and Ryan married, Ryan was cast in yet another reality show called I Love Money.
Jeez. Wonder what that's about.
I know. And so that show filmed in Mexico. I believe it was 5 weeks of filming.
Mm-hmm.
While he was filming, he was witnessed by producers and the
people
calling Jasmine repeatedly, telling her he would give her the life she dreamed of and he was going to win that show too, which was also like a money, like prize money. And he also interrogated her a lot about, like, where are you? Who are you with? What are you doing?
Yeah. Those kind of normal things.
Yeah. Those normal things about, like, I just met you. Like, where are you?
I barely know you. Yes, we're married, but.
Yeah. Yeah. He was, like, obviously displaying some controlling and obsessive traits, which are bad. And, you know, like most spontaneous Vegas marriages, this one, as you could probably guess, between Ryan and Jasmine started taking a turn for the worse. I would say, like, immediately. It was
Yeah.
So within 3 months of being married, Ryan actually, like, assaulted Jasmine. He hit her on the arm. I don't know what that means. Punched her, grabbed her, anything.
Okay.
Just bad. And she fell in a pool, pushed in a pool, some incident.
Okay. Clearly. So he, like, punched her and pushed her in a pool.
I think that's
very nice.
Safe to say.
What a gentleman.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And it was over, like, jealousy of one of her exes. Yeah, not looking good. Jasmine had told her mom, so she kept the marriage, like, pretty secret from a lot of people.
Well, I don't blame her.
Yeah. And that, but she did tell her mom. But she told her mom that the marriage was just so Ryan could get his U.S. visa. And it wasn't, like, anything serious. Which, why would you? That doesn't, that's even worse than being in love. Yeah, exactly. Maybe money. I did read about, like, some conversation about him, like, sending her money. So it might have been, like, with a promise.
An arrangement. But if that's the arrangement, why would he even care who she talks to?
Yeah, like, it doesn't make... And it doesn't make sense. It's like, I own you now type of thing. After this domestic assault incident, for whatever reason, the couple tried to move on and made up, I guess. But as all of us know, all of us merds people, that means murder. domestic violence typically doesn't stop.
Just disappear.
It's like, whoops.
Goes away all on its own.
Yeah, doesn't happen. Though Ryan had a court date set for this assault charge, the couple tried to, like, not think about it. Like, okay, let's just live our life as a couple and deal with this court thing when it comes. They planned a trip together in San Diego to go to a charity poker tournament. And this poker tournament came only 5 months, almost to the day after they first met. So this is a lot of drama within a five-month span of time. Within less than 6 months. I mean, they were married. They were apart for some time while Ryan was filming in Mexico. And then there was, like, a domestic battery charge. So that's, you couldn't get any more red flaggy. I would say that this marriage was probably doomed from the beginning. And unfortunately, although Jasmine had seen the signs, like, she seemed like she was a smart girl. She saw the signs. She told people, like, I'm very concerned, but, you know, she did go with him on this trip, which would eventually lead to her murder and mutilation. So there you go. Take it away, Elisa.
Okay. So Jasmine and her husband, Ryan Jenkins, they checked into a hotel by the name of L'Auberge Del Mar, and that's located in San Diego, California. And they checked in on August 13th, 2009. And like Justine said, they were there to attend a charity poker tournament for Karma, the Karma Foundation, which that poker tournament was being held at the Del Mar Hilton. So at the time that the couple checked in, they had a large gray suitcase with them, which will come into play a little later.
Foreshadowing.
Yes. So just kind of keep that in mind.
Okay.
They showed up with a large gray suitcase. After they checked in, they got ready for the poker tournament and they left their hotel to head towards the Del Mar Hilton. And Ryan actually participated in the poker tournament. And the two were seen on video surveillance leaving the Hilton Hotel where the poker tournament took place. And that was around 2:30 a.m. on the morning of August 14th, 2009. So a little while after leaving the Hilton, the couple were seen again on video surveillance leaving a downtown San Diego nightclub called the Ivy Hotel. And so if we put those pieces together, we know that the couple attended the tournament. They left the tournament at like 2:30 a.m. Went to the Ivy Hotel for a short period of time. Just for
a fun drink or whatever.
Whatevs, yeah. And then they left the hotel, presumably to return back to their own hotel room.
Mm-hmm.
And the footage of the couple leaving the Ivy Hotel is the last time that at least Jasmine will be seen alive.
Okay.
So all right. The next time that we see Ryan is around 4:38 a.m. And he was shown returning to the L'Auberge Hotel where the couple was staying. He can be seen on video surveillance running to their room from the lobby.
Odd.
Yes. And opening their door. Jasmine, like I mentioned, she was nowhere to be seen. Ryan is seen again at 5 a.m. leaving his hotel room and he has a phone receiver in one hand. And then he's kind of like cradling an ice bucket under the other arm. He's also seen putting the phone receiver on top of a piece of furniture that was located in the hotel hallway just in front of their room.
That is like,
yeah,
couldn't be more.
I mean, and it's like the most clear footage. Yeah. Like, it was really good cameras that they had. Mm-hmm. Like, really
thank
good.
God.
We then see Ryan returning to his room with ice in the ice bucket, but he did not take the phone receiver back to his room with him.
He put the phone receiver up on the furniture in the hallway, hit it.
Yeah.
Got some ice. Went back to the room.
Yep.
At like 5-something a.m. by himself.
And he left that phone receiver on top of that piece of furniture.
I do that when I go to hotels.
So cash. Ryan is later seen at 6:24 a.m. again leaving the room. And this time his hands are like full of clothing and toiletries.
All right.
Not suspicious at all.
No.
He then returns to his room empty handed, only to leave again at 6:51 a.m.
He's like working in the middle of the night, like early morning. Yeah.
He then returns to his hotel room yet again a couple of hours later at 9:09 a.m. And this time he's wearing a different shirt. He had previously been wearing a sleeveless shirt. And at 9:09 a.m., he's shown on video surveillance wearing a long sleeve shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And at 9:20 a.m., we see Ryan leave his hotel room for the final time. During all of the trips to and from the hotel room that Ryan was making, we don't see Jasmine at all, including when Ryan checked out at 9:20 a.m. And every time that Ryan is seen leaving and coming back to his room, he doesn't have any bags with him, which is weird because remember, the couple was shown checking in with a large gray suitcase.
Yeah, that's what. Okay, so when he was like leaving his room carrying toiletries and... Yeah.
Things that belong inside of a suitcase, but he was never seen taking the suitcase out to the car.
Carrying his clothes in his arms at like 6 or totally. Whatever. All right. Mm-hmm. All right.
So after returning to the couple's apartment on August 15th, 2009, and their apartment was located in Los Angeles. So
okay.
After returning to Los Angeles on August 15th, 2009, Ryan Jenkins makes a phone call to the police department at about 8:55 p.m. And at that time, he reports Jasmine missing.
Mm-hmm.
He told police that he last saw Jasmine at about 8:30 p.m. on the night of August 14th at their home on Edinburgh Avenue in Los Angeles.
So that was the night before he called, he said he's?
Yeah. Okay. So he reported her missing the...
Like pretty much 24 hours after he claims to have last seen her.
Yes.
Okay.
So Ryan said that the two had gone to San Diego for the poker event. That much we know.
Mm-hmm.
And that after returning, Jasmine had dropped him off that evening and left to run some errands, but she had not returned. And at that time, Ryan also casually mentioned to police that he was having some sort of issue with his visa. And like Justine said, he was a Canadian citizen. So he just kind of mentioned, you know, I'm having an issue with my visa and I might not be around.
Okay.
Los Angeles, because I need to take care of this.
Okay.
So when police asked if he was worried about his wife being missing, Ryan said that he was concerned. However, Jasmine frequently took off. Okay. Whatever that means.
Frequently.
Yeah. So they don't know each other very well.
Oh my gosh. That's a really good point, Lisa.
And second of all, if this is something she did frequently, why call and report her missing this time?
And then after only 24 hours, if she's...
Yeah.
Lisa, so, frequently.
Yeah. At this time, police are investigating this as a missing persons case. They do some digging into Jasmine's past and find out that she has an ex-husband and an ex-boyfriend that she had been in contact with very recently.
Mm-hmm.
So
they took it like pretty seriously, her missing. That's good.
You know, despite him saying that she did this frequently.
They're like, whatever, loser.
So her ex-husband's name is Michael Cardosi, and he had recently been released from jail. Mm-hmm. And him and Jasmine had actually met up with each other not too long before her disappearance. That was kind of like a red flag to police. But after speaking with him, they quickly realized that Michael could not have possibly had any part in her disappearance because he was wearing a tracked ankle monitor. Okay. So they were like able to track his every moment, every movement.
Well, hey, man. Sometimes
they talked to his parole officer. Like,
yeah.
He was ruled out almost immediately.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then the other suspect was Jasmine's ex-boyfriend by the name of Robert Hasman. And Robert lived in Las Vegas. So after going through Jasmine's phone records, police were able to see that Jasmine had been texting back and forth with Robert while she was at the poker tournament with Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
And police stated that the conversation between the two was regarding Jasmine ending things with Ryan, wanting to get back with Robert. And she also asked Robert to get into his private plane and fly to the Burbank airport to pick her up.
Private plane?
Yeah, he was very wealthy, but he did not do that.
Okay.
And after speaking with Robert, police were also able to rule him out as a suspect due to the fact that he was not in the area at the time of Jasmine's disappearance.
Okay.
So they were both, those two possible suspects were quickly ruled out.
And so that goes with the whole breaking up, but keeping them around a little.
Yes.
Like there's different guys. Mm-hmm. All right.
So after eliminating all other possible suspects, police focused more heavily on Ryan and they started digging into his past a bit more. It was at that time that they found the domestic abuse charge that against Justine had
Jasmine.
Discussed.
Yeah. Okay.
Where Ryan was punched her in the arm and pushed her in the pool.
And this time it was in the US, so they were able to actually see.
Yeah. And so like after discovering this information about Ryan, the police pretty much put him at the top of the list as prime suspect in Jasmine's disappearance.
Mm-hmm.
And they quickly got a search warrant for the apartment that he shared with Jasmine in Los Angeles. And when they gained access to the apartment, they discovered that Ryan had taken a lot of his clothing and personal items with him. They were able to confirm through apartment garage surveillance footage that Ryan walked into the parking structure on Friday, August 14th in the afternoon. And that he left the apartment in his own vehicle with a suitcase full of his personal items that same night.
Which could be like, hey, I have to go take care of visa stuff. Okay.
Good. Also through their investigation, police discovered that Ryan had a storage unit located in Nevada where he kept a speedboat. So again, they went and searched that out, and they discovered that his boat was in fact missing. So at that time, they were pretty convinced that Ryan was on the run at this point.
In a speedboat.
Was, you know, which they were.
James Bond.
You know, yeah. They later found his vehicle with the boat. It's not a boat ramp.
Oh, okay.
But
trailer or
yeah,
whatever.
Boat trailer yeah. with no boat.
Okay.
And they found that in Blaine, Washington, which is.
Oh, my gosh. He's like all over the place.
And Blaine, Washington sits directly on the Canadian border.
Oh.
So that just added to their suspicion of him taking off.
Okay.
During the search for Jasmine, a man had called in to report a gray suitcase. Remember, gray suitcase.
Oh, there it is.
That he found in a dumpster behind some apartments in Las Vegas with what he described as having a child's body. Inside of it.
Can you imagine?
That call was made on August 15th.
Okay.
So on
August 15th was when Ryan called in at 8:30 p.m.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Just recapping.
Mm-hmm. So on August 18th, 2009, the coroner was able to identify the remains as being those of Jasmine Fior. Mm-hmm. And at that time, an arrest warrant was issued for Ryan Jenkins.
They moved like pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. That's really
but
good.
But so did he.
Yeah, I guess. Jeez.
Yeah. Her cause of death was listed as manual strangulation. However, she also had signs of being pretty severely beaten, and she suffered a broken nose.
Mm.
And then I know Justine had mentioned mutilation.
Yeah, I did.
And here's where that comes in. Okay. So to add to her already beaten, broken body, her fingertips had been removed as well as her teeth.
Removed. That's.
Yes.
Ugh.
So her teeth were gone, fingertips gone. And
oh my God. Like all of her teeth were just pulled.
Correct.
Oh. Ugh.
Police believe that was done in an attempt to make it more difficult for them to identify her body.
Yeah.
Which in normal circumstances, it would have worked.
Yeah.
However, police were able to use the serial number on her breast implants to identify her remains.
Booyah.
Very quickly.
All right.
She was found on the 15th, identified on the 18th.
Man. Well, they move quick. Mm-hmm. That's pretty impressive. But I can't. Yeah. Because how else would she have been found? Or how else would they identify her? No teeth.
Yeah, no, it would have taken, they would have probably had to reach out to the media.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Mm-hmm.
But thankfully, serial number, breast implants.
Yep, there we go.
On the night of August 20th, Ryan was seen with a blonde woman at the Thunderbird Motel in Hope, British Columbia. And the blonde woman had checked into the hotel and paid for 3 nights in cash while Ryan stayed in the vehicle, which was a PT Cruiser.
Whoa. Okay.
The mystery blonde was described as being attractive and in her late 20s to 30s. And she, guests had said that she had stayed in the room, and he was in room number 2. So she had stayed in the room with Ryan for roughly like 20 minutes before leaving, taking off in her PT Cruiser.
Okay.
Police later found out that the woman was Ryan's half-sister, Elena.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And
interesting. Okay.
During his stay, the manager had only seen Ryan leave his room once, and that was the day after he checked in, and he said that Ryan looked like, basically he looked like crap and was not recognizable from the picture of him that was being shown all over the news at the time.
That bad from just like.
Yeah. Huh. So he saw him, didn't recognize him as this.
He saw the news.
Guy on the run for murder.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Because he looked so disheveled and like tired and just crap.
Shit. Or crap.
On August 23rd, 2009, at around 11:30 a.m., that hotel manager at the Thunderbird Motel, he had realized that no one had checked out of room number 2. Mm-hmm. And so this was. The mystery blonde paid for three nights.
Mystery blonde.
So they were supposed to have checked out by then.
Yeah.
And they hadn't. So he got his nephew and the two entered the room. And at that time, they discovered the body of Ryan Jenkins hanging from his own belt on a closet.
On like the hanging thing?
Yeah.
That was able to hold him?
Apparently.
Hmm. Okay.
The police obviously showed up fairly quickly, and they were not able to locate a suicide note in the room. However, after gaining access to Ryan's computer, police did find a document that was titled Last Will and Testament, which was dated as being created on August 20th.
Was that days before being discovered? Yes.
Huh?
Before his body was found in the room. It was like a couple days before.
Yeah, so he had checked in on the August 20th.
Oh, so this was like...
So he created this document on his laptop on August 20th, the same night he checked in.
Okay, so he decided like that same day. All right.
Mm-hmm. And the document did not provide a confession for the murder of Jasmine, but it did kind of blame her for the couple's problems how he was unfairly being judged and perceived as a monster by media outlets and the public. And without a confession from Ryan and with him being dead, police were only left to speculate what happened to Jasmine on the night of August 14th, 2009. So what they believe happened is that after leaving the Ivy nightclub, Jasmine and Ryan had gotten into Jasmine's Mercedes, gotten into some sort of argument regarding Jasmine texting her ex-boyfriend.
Mm.
And they believe that Ryan became so enraged that he began beating Jasmine inside of her car.
Ugh.
They then believe that he carried her after getting to the L'Auberge hotel where they were staying.
Mm-hmm.
They think that he carried her from her car to the back patio of their hotel room and then ran around to the front to open the room using his key. And if we remember, he was seen actually running his room on surveillance footage.
So that no one would see
her. At 4:38. Or she couldn't call for help. She had no opportunity to get away. And it was police were able to kind of confirm this theory after they found blood inside of Jasmine's car, as well as blood and a single hair matted on the back patio of the couple's hotel room.
Okay.
So that kind of...
Yeah.
They were able to kind of confirm what they thought happened based on the blood evidence in her car. Blood evidence on the back patio with her hair matted into it.
Was there blood in the actual hotel room? I'm sure.
I don't think they mentioned that. I think it was... They believe that after returning to the hotel room that Ryan took that phone receiver out and hid it so that Jasmine could not call for help while he went to get some ice. And they think the ice was either for her injuries or for him to make a cocktail. I don't know if that was like a joke that they were making.
I think probably because it's, or who knows?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Maybe he was making cocktails. But at this time, police believe wholeheartedly that Jasmine was still alive at the time.
Oh.
And they think that Ryan was maybe pleading with Jasmine to forgive him for beating
her
up.
Ice. Let me I'm so sorry.
At that point, based on the conversation, the text conversation she was having with her ex-boyfriend,
mm-hmm.
we know that Jasmine was like done at that point. She just wanted to get away from him.
Yeah.
So they think that Jasmine said, no, this is it. I'm not staying with you anymore. This is over. And at that point, Ryan snapped and strangled her to death. They think that Ryan then removed all of his clothing from that gray suitcase so that he could load Jasmine's body into the suitcase and bring it to the car using that same back patio that he brought Jasmine in through.
Oh my.
And after leaving the hotel for the last time, police think that he went to a separate location to remove Jasmine's teeth and fingertips, and then dumped her body in a garbage bin behind that apartment complex. And then he drove himself back to Los Angeles, where he calls police and reports her missing.
I have a question.
Yes.
We don't know the answer, but it's almost like, what are the odds of getting a ground floor hotel room in Las Vegas? We've been a lot. Never. I don't know.
They weren't in Las Vegas. They were in San Diego.
Oh, San Diego. Okay. Yeah. All right. That's right. Okay.
but still.
The ground floor hotel room, because the whole time you were telling this story of like, he entered, then he took his, you know, it's like, where was she? Mm-hmm. Oh, ground level. That changes everything.
Well, if he hadn't had that access, then he would have disposed of her some other way.
Yeah. He's just like opportunity to. It just happened. You don't think it was premeditation?
No, I definitely don't think it was. Not even slightly.
Okay.
I think it was heat of the moment rage.
And he's okay. Here we go with a.
Mm-hmm. And it's good that he did bring her back to the hotel room because he was caught on surveillance footage at the hotel so many times.
Going in and out and holding his.
Yeah.
Toiletries and then carrying his clothes and changing and putting the phone up on this piece of furniture.
Could you get any more guilty?
Yeah.
Which brings me to this, which I think is, so Ryan's family is still convinced that Ryan is innocent and did not play any part in the beating or murder of Jasmine Fior.
That's like laughable, but it's not because.
Yeah. And I get family being in denial. However, the evidence in this situation is so overwhelming that how can you deny that Ryan was responsible for the murder of Jasmine?
I could only see because a half sister was helping him that night.
Well, funny you bring that up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Elena found a quote of hers and she said, and keep in mind, this is the same sister that helped him evade capture by renting him a motel room.
Yeah, that was the one with
the mysterious blonde. Mm-hmm. And she said, and I quote, "I hold on to the thought that he couldn't possibly do this. Until proven without a doubt, I have to say that my brother is innocent."
Okay.
So I don't know what other proof she wants.
I think, I'm just thinking of her helping him and he came to her and, you know, the casting producers said he had this incredible charisma. He had this great personality. He was able to talk Jasmine, who's an intelligent woman, into marrying him and being with him, and talked his way out of like domestic abuse with her. I think he had the gift of gab.
Okay.
And that he convinced his half sister, like, everything they're saying about me is wrong. It didn't happen. And I could see that happening, but.
And what's the explanation? How do you explain that away?
Don't, Elisa, you know, like crazy people are able to just justify everything or like reason everything away. They'll find something.
Mm. Blood all inside her car.
Well, this happened.
Blood on the patio.
Well, she brought this guy. It must have been another guy. And blah,
her body being found dead, mutilated inside his suitcase. Really? What kind of, aside from having the gift of gab, look at the actual, she said, like, without a doubt, until proven without a doubt. Well, I would pretty much say that's proven without a doubt.
That's so much physical evidence.
I don't know. Just.
And then she helped him. Didn't she get in trouble at all or no?
I don't know. He was a fugitive, right? I didn't dig into that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there was a warrant out for murder for his arrest.
She should be.
And you know, the especially frustrating part about this case is the fact that Ryan did take his own life. He kind of blamed Jasmine for the couple's problems.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't confess to what he had done to her. And because he killed himself, he couldn't be tried for her murder. Jasmine's family is left with no real answers. I mean, they know he did it.
Yeah.
But it's still so, like.
They probably, like, play that night and events, like, through their head trying to figure out.
Well, he didn't have to suffer any consequences.
He was in control. Yeah. Like, we see a lot with being in control.
So that concludes episode 25 of The Murder Sisters.
I think the lesson here is,
pay attention to those red flags.
Don't marry someone after 2 days.
Yeah.
Thanks.
All right.
All right.
And then, so I did also want to drop this little bomb, I guess. It's not a bomb.
Bomb.
But next week's.
Please don't.
Anyway. Don't. So next week's episode is going to be a listener suggestion, and we think that you guys are really going to like it. Big thank you to Dustin for writing in and requesting the case. We're really looking forward to covering it.
It's a case I am familiar with.
That's it's a crazy. Good case. It's a good case. Lots of turns, twists. Like, cool. Yeah. It's good. It's going to be good. If you, like Dustin, want to write into us, then you can do so at murdersisterspod@gmail.com. That's murdersisterspod@gmail.com. And thank you guys for tuning in for yet another episode.
Thank you.
Bye.